Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 53. Today, we're going to be talking about race. Now, right off the bat, there's two camps of people. First camp is sitting here being like, oh, God, race, more identity politics, more political correctness, more wokeness. We can't get away from this stuff. Do we really have to listen to this for an hour? We've never actually done a podcast episode about race. We've done all these episodes. Not one has been specifically about race. And then the second camp is being like, oh, great, two white guys talking about race for an hour. This is exactly what we don't need. Both of those groups are going to be pleasantly surprised. The first group, we're going to talk about it in a different way than maybe they're used to. The second group is going to be really surprised. I had to actually go about making a civil rights case, trying to put that together for my own family. The people that are going to be shocked at exactly how hard it is to build a civil rights case. People think if you're white in America, you say, hey, pass the pepper, and then you go to jail, and the PC-ness is off the charts. And even in 2019 Los Angeles, it was almost impossible to get anybody to do anything to help my family. But here it is, 2020. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and this is something I want to talk about. The biggest thing coming up is the president's trial in the Senate. He's already been impeached in the House. He's almost certainly going to be let off scot-free in the Senate. Trump is a great example. People talk about the division. He sows division. He tries to break everybody apart. Kellyanne Conway, on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, she said that Trump is as persecuted as MLK was. He knows what it's like to be him because he's going through the same trials and tribulations, and he also wants to bring the country together and unite people and stop all the divisiveness. And amazingly, she was not struck by lightning. She did not drop dead the second that she said this. Somehow she was allowed to say this with a straight face and her jaw not fall off. It's funny to me that all the people that sow the most division, Tulsi Blowhard, Kellyanne Conway, Trump himself, they always talk about, oh, we're trying to bring the country together. We're all about unity. It's all bullshit. People talk about political correctness being a problem. I see PR being a problem. And there's a thin line between PC and PR where people are literally saying things that are the exact opposite of what they're doing. And you see this in politics all the time. There'll be something called the Clean Skies Act that actually pollutes the shit out of, or hey, we're for clean drinking water, and then it's a bill that allows all the regulations to keep the drinking water clean go away. The job creating tax cut is something that just benefits people who want to buy a second bass boat. And my own family, we're going to talk about a diversity and inclusion scholarship for my black biracial son that was the exact opposite of what we thought it was going to be. But I want to talk just a second about Trump. This is white entitlement spectacularly haywire. This is somebody who's gotten every fucking thing he's ever wanted. It's been really easy for him. It's been handed to him. You've heard the New York Times say that he was given $400 million, and yet in his mind, it was a $1 million loan from his dad. He inherited almost all this wealth. Most people say that the amount of money he inherited, if he had put it in a blind investment account, he would be worth more money today than all the investments and the empire building and the wage busting and the union busting and fucking over everybody he's ever done business with. He would be better off if he'd put that money in a bank and literally done nothing with it. He'd be worth as much as Tom Steyer, somebody who's actually worth $2 or $3 billion. He comes out there like he can't get a fair shake. No matter what happens to him, the luckiest fucking man on the planet, a man who defaults in bankruptcies multiple times, yet somehow still keeps all of his money, a man who cheats on one wife with an even hotter wife, then an even hotter wife with an even hotter wife, who cheats on her with porn stars and Playboy bunnies, and then becomes elected president with the evangelical vote. He's the definition of failing upwards, but in his mind, everybody's out to get him. He can't catch a break. It's all stacked against him. The odds. I mean, you want to play the world's smallest violin for this guy. You want to say, shut the fuck up and count your billions and fuck off if you can't see how lucky you truly are. For the Senate, all his fans, all his supporters in the Congress, they're saying Trump should be allowed to bring witnesses. And the Democrats are saying, absolutely, bring your witnesses. And he goes, okay, I want to call Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. They said, but they're not there for the phone call. They have nothing to do with this. They didn't listen to it. They weren't in the room. They don't know what you're talking about. It literally is how the King of England might think. Like, I'm being impeached. You know who I want to bring in? My chief political opponent, the man who's almost certain to be the Democratic nominee for president, and his son, who I was trying to extort through these phone calls. Those are the people that I want to bring in as my witnesses so that my Republican henchmen can ask them 100 embarrassing personal questions and then get them dirt that I wasn't able to solicit from China and Ukraine, the very thing I'm being impeached for. Now we can get it in the Congress. This is white entitlement gone fucking mad, because only somebody who has literally never heard the word no, only they could be talking this way. I'm being impeached for borderline extortion, inappropriate uses of presidential power. So let me do it even worse by saying that my witnesses are going to be my chief political opponents. Talk a little bit about my own personal life and something that happened back last year. And this story with the school is going to be important, because it's really about a school that's talking about diversity and inclusion. And we're so diverse, patting themselves on the back, talking about what a good job they're doing. Meanwhile, what they're actually doing is the exact opposite. That this conversation's everywhere. I mean, the Democratic Party, the debates, there's been a lot of talk that 5 or 6 candidates are at the debates. They're all white. And they're talking about all these issues that affect race and class. Meanwhile, not only are they white, they're mostly ancient. Hospital ER team standing by in case Steyer, Sanders, or Biden falls on the stage and can't get up. Candidates like Kamala Harris was my candidate to win the whole thing, and I thought was going to take it. She's like, hey, it's so expensive. I'm literally priced out of the primary. Bloomberg and Steyer have spent so much money, I can't even afford to stay in the race. Much like with these private schools, we're priced out. Minority families can never even begin to afford to pay $35,000 a year tuition. And even when they get a scholarship like we did, and everywhere you go, you see, hey, we're good people, we're this, we're that. It's all over their website, and yet they actually treat you like garbage, fucking over a black kindergarten kid, and yet they believe their own nonsense. They believe their message of good, or at least the headmaster pretends that he does while he rakes in money hand over fist. I do think it's relevant to what's happening right now. For those that don't know, Los Angeles has got one of the worst public school systems in America. It's underfunded, and big part of that is probably the school choice. Dozens of charter schools, there's even more private schools. There's 1,000 schools in Los Angeles County. Now, the county that I grew up in Alabama, there was one school. You went there if you were brain damaged. I mean, there were kids that literally spent the whole day under blankets pissing themselves, and they were in the same classroom, kids that were at grade level or beyond grade level. You went to the one school, and if you didn't go, it was because you were a religious nut and you were either homeschooled or you were put into this Hosanna Christian school or something like that, where they sent all the snake handler kids, people you send the Piggly Wiggly parking lot, like, oh fuck, don't come talk to me, please God, I don't want to hear it. The ladies that wore the denim skirts and had their hair up in those gray buns. Now, I don't know what it is about that religion that makes all the women prematurely gray, but that was the alternative if you didn't want to go to the public school. But LA is 1,000 schools, literally, in Los Angeles County and some of the surrounding towns. So you can drive yourself mad with, here's the best public schools, here's the charter schools that are around those public schools, here's the best private schools, here's the worst private schools. My son, for preschool, he went to what was formerly an Armenian school that became a STEM school. And you might be thinking, like, okay, STEM, you could see where maybe a school would have enough students to focus on that, but is there even an interest in going to an all-Armenian school? And apparently there was, or it wouldn't have been there. And the only reason that it wasn't that anymore is because they built a bigger location somewhere else. So there's Korean schools, there's French language schools, Spanish schools, girls schools, boys schools, probably fucking Eskimo schools for all I know. The process to get into one of the really good private schools is a fucking nightmare. You go through about a year touring the school. You're acting like you're there touring the school and finding out about it. They're finding out about you. They're asking you questions. They're kind of getting a sense of who you are. Then you got to come for a parental interview, then a child interview, where that's where they take your son and they interview him. Some schools do it individually. Some schools do it in a group. The school he eventually got into, Campbell Hall, they do it in a group and individual, and they interview us, and they do a school tour, and they do a night where you go to school and you ask people questions, and you don't really ask the questions you actually want to know about, because then you definitely won't get in. They say they're not keeping track of that stuff. There's no way they're not keeping track of it. Every individual school has 5 or 6 events that you're jumping through hurdles. There's a stack of paperwork, questionnaire. They ask questions about your family medical history. Implied right there, they don't want anyone who has a bad family medical history. Like, if you put, oh, 4 generations of my family have had ADD. Pretty much everybody in my family has been mentally retarded, but it didn't show up at all until they were 6 or 7 years old. They're going to not let you in. These are the kind of things that they are looking for. Otherwise, why are they asking about your family medical history? How is that relevant to what a kindergarten kid is going to be doing? February of that year, every single day on the calendar, we had something to do. We would go in from one private school to the next, to the next, to the next. It really felt a little Orwellian. They're finding out everything. I mean, we had to apply for financial aid. And to do that, you got to submit your tax returns. These schools are $35,000 a year for kindergarten. Now that sounds insane. It doesn't sound insane. It is insane. If you're thinking, well, you're an idiot for paying that. Yeah, but we weren't ever going to pay that. We couldn't afford it. You know, I don't want to have to sell a kidney so my kid can go to a kindergarten class. Kindergarten, you got to think, were they using French silk to wipe their ass? Is there a better quality finger paint? Why would one school be so much more expensive than the other? And of course, there's no real reason for it. We got a scholarship, a full diversity and inclusion scholarship to a school called Campbell Hall. It's K-12. It's a private school. It's an Episcopalian school, and that'll become important later. But basically, this is the school that Denzel Washington's kid, John David Washington, he's going to be in the new Christopher Nolan movie, went to. Christopher Nolan's kids, for that matter, go there. The Olsen twins went there. Just around campus, I would see some celebrities every once in a while. One day I went to pick my son up. Oh, hey, Brody, how's it going? You know, not really that excited. Right behind me, Colin Farrell shows up to pick up his kid. Colin, oh my God, how's it going? You know, butt kiss, smooch. The Diversity and Inclusion Scholarship Fund is to allow minority kids, so my son is black, biracial, my wife is Muslim, or her family is. I don't think they knew that part, though. They just assumed maybe we were Christian because every black family, they're like in the Tyler Perry spectrum of that. So I don't think they knew about the religious aspect. Might not have let us in, because I definitely think they weren't that excited about it when they did find it out later on in the year. There's Nigeria, there's a language thing. There was a lot of boxes that he could tick off. 550 people that year that applied to get into that kindergarten class. They accepted 44. Out of that 44, half that are gimme slots. Like they have an older sibling already at the school. One of the parents was an alumni. Several of the parents taught at the school. So these are not really 44 brand new spaces. Probably less than 25. Only 5% of the kids that apply to that school, probably less than that, apply to that school, actually get in. UCLA, New York University, the Ivy League schools have higher acceptance rates. Schools that are notorious difficult to get into, so much so Lori Loughlin is willing to say, Ann Sullivan taught my daughter how to read and write. She's deaf, blind, and dumb. She can barely walk. She's got a bum leg. Like, celebrities are willing to make up total bullshit to get their kids into these Ivy League schools. They're easier to get into than a school like Campbell Hall in Los Angeles, one of the so-called best top private schools in LA County. When we got in and we're one of the 20-25 kids that are brand new to the school, don't have connections there, don't know anybody there, really truly new to the school, not only that, but probably the only one that was going to get a mostly free ride to the school. We're ecstatic. Of course, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, like, I don't know about an Episcopalian school. It seemed kind of traditional. Maybe it's not really what it's cracked up to be. But all the reviews online are great. It's virtually free to go there. The only thing they could have made it better is if they'd paid us to go there. Other schools let us in that were pretty much as good, but they were offering half tuition. So if you're going to have to either pay $15,000 or nothing, you'll probably choose nothing. And it was K-12, which we thought was exciting because it's like he'll get the same group of friends from kindergarten all the way to 12th grade. Now, that's what we thought at the time. Flash forward a year later, we're literally being kicked out of the school. June 2019, they say you can't come back for first grade. So ironically enough, a diversity and inclusion scholarship, you're being excluded from first grade for a kindergarten kid. Now, you might sit there and think, man, your son, he must have been one wild-ass hellion. He must have started fires. He must have played with knives. He must have run wild in the parking lot with a pair of scissors chopping off hedges. No, and actually I saw a boy in his kindergarten class do that same shit. He didn't get kicked out because he was white and his parents are rich and they donate a lot of money to the school. So a lot of the same things you might think my son did, I actually saw kids do that. Nobody gave a shit. They weren't kicked out. Instead, we were getting emails about Ford, my son, being like, oh, he bumped into a girl at PE. He cut in line at a drinking fountain. These are real emails. I showed this to a lawyer and they fucking cracked up. They laughed. Basically, from the minute we get into the school, his teacher is a racist. It's obvious she don't like him. It's obvious why the reason is. Probably didn't like us. We're an interracial couple. Some people have a problem with that. She's Spanish, and by that I mean Spain. Spanish people typically think they're better than other Latinos. That's the whole colonialism thing kicking in. She doesn't like him from the very second that he enters the classroom. Doesn't like us. Doesn't make things easy. From the first day of school, doesn't like his backpack. Wants us to go out and buy a brand new backpack. Second week of school, doesn't like his shoes. Says she can understand him. She wants us to get a speech therapist for him. This is a kid with no speech impediment. And she's saying she can understand him. There's 1,000 different ways that teachers that are racist make kids feel inferior. He needs a tutor. That's something she said said, towards the middle of the school year, even though he wasn't academically behind. He was ahead of most of the other boys in the class. He needs a speech therapist, even though he has no speech impediment. Then eventually, he needs an occupational therapist. I've never heard of this for a kindergarten kid. Probably most of you haven't either. But from August to February, it's just the teacher complaining about him. There's nobody else really saying shit about him. Nobody else is really seeming to even really notice him that much, except some of the other parents. Now, these people are some real gems. Some of them were great, but most of them weren't. My son doesn't look like the other two black kids in that class, one of whom was held back. The only kid to be held back from the class before was black. He was supposed to be in first grade. He was in kindergarten instead. Already, you're starting to pick up on a lot of red flags. They don't look alike, and they can't tell them apart. They can't tell my wife apart from that boy's mother, even though they don't look alike. So people were constantly mixing him up with somebody else. A boy said, oh, your son did this horrible thing to me on a day that my son wasn't even at school. He was out sick, and then he went and told his dad that. His dad goes up to the school. His dad's raising hell, being like, ah, this kid Ford, he's a menace to society. He wasn't even at school. But the principal and the teacher, they don't feel it's important to correct the dad in that assumption. They don't say to him, well, there's no way he could have done that because he wasn't at school. They just say, okay, we'll talk to him about it. Never do. It never gets resolved, and there's bad blood. From the first day that my son entered the class, one of the dads came up and said, yeah, I told my daughter to stay away from your son because he's a little player. This is how shit gets started. His daughter was white, of course. Majority of the kids at that school are white. If I don't specify that they're black, they're white. 80% of the kindergarten class was white, and majority of that had blonde hair. I mean, I think over 50% of the kids had blonde hair. This is in LA County, where the majority of kids do not have blonde hair. Got dads being like, yeah, I told my daughter, you know, stay away from that boy. These are kindergarten kids. There's no risk of his daughter getting pregnant in finger painting class. Like, there's no risk of it being like, oh, they're playing with blocks today. Tomorrow, they'll be making out behind the dumpster. Already, they're treating them very, very adult. But from August to February, there's a few parents grumbling and bitching and whining and complaining like they always do anytime they're forced to share space with black people. And you've got the teacher. But other than that, nobody really cares. January of last year, 2019, our daughter is born. So we have a second kid exactly a year ago. We go into the hospital. Keep in mind that this teacher has been awful all year long. She's been bitching about him. She's been sending us emails for petty shit. She's been calling redundant meetings, and the meetings are inappropriate. We go in for the meetings. In one meeting, she called our son strange. In another meeting, she said she didn't understand him. In another meeting, she said he was weird. I mean, on and on and on. It's really inappropriate. It makes us uncomfortable. It's kind of like she's obsessed with him in a lot of different ways.
In one meeting, she was like, oh, he's so good looking, and he is good looking, and that was perfectly fine. But then she's like, I like to just watch him sometimes. Sometimes I just find myself staring at him. Now, if that doesn't make your skin crawl, I don't know what will.
We go into the hospital to have a kid. She gives him a project. She knows we're in the hospital having a baby. She gives him an individual project for the first time all year. He's not had an individual project. She picks that day, the first time in his entire life that both of us are not with him, gives him a project to do. And then the day after our daughter's born, we're still in the hospital because it's a C-section birth, sends us an email being like, he didn't turn in that project. That's what we're thinking about 24 hours after our daughter's born. Then we come back and bring her stupid fucking project. A week later, she's sending us an email being like, when all the excitement of the baby dies down, I want to have another meeting with the principal and this other woman who does counseling. That's the thing about schools like that. They've got all these money for administration jobs. They don't have money for a lot of basic shit that you think about, but they've got people falling all over themselves. Well, nothing to do because there's all these administrators up there. When the excitement of the baby dies down, this is a week after our daughter's born and we're not even really enjoying it, I call the principal. It's late February. There's only a few more months left in the school year. Let's just ride it out. This woman, I don't know that she's the best fit for him. I'm not sure why she's calling all these meetings. Keep in mind, at this point from the principal, we've had one email all year long. And that was just to confirm a meeting that the teacher wanted to have earlier in the school year. Principal says, okay. A couple weeks later, it's like all hell's broken loose. We start getting emails from the principal. March and April, one email the first 6 months of the school year, to now we're getting at least one, sometimes two a week. And it's just the pettiest, most mind-blowing shit you could ever come up with, that the principal's being like, well, he bumped into a girl at PE and he didn't apologize immediately. So we called both the girl and him out of PE, took him into my office, talked to him for 30 minutes about feelings and what to do. We called the coach in and he asked him why he was like, basically the gist of the emails is your son's missing a shit ton of school because we're pulling him out of class every 5 minutes so that we can bother him with some new thing that we've come up with. He's not in school anymore. He's in feelings class. He's being socialized. He's in the principal's office almost every day. And because I've said something about the teacher's now sending him to the principal's office almost every day.
And the teacher starts sending us a weekly email on Friday afternoon with all the stuff he's done wrong that week. We call it the Friday grievance report.
In March, they want him to do occupational therapy. So he starts doing occupational therapy. This is a kid who doesn't need it. We go to an occupational therapist. She says, you know, we can do this as much as you want to, but I have no idea why your son is in here. Then they want speech therapy. So we start doing speech therapy. Then they start talking about, we need an evaluator to come in and watch him in the classroom and tell us basically what's wrong with him, assuming that there's something wrong with him. Now, about this point, my red flag-o-meter starts going off because we've done everything they've asked us to do, and they're still asking us to do more shit. And this is the very end of the school year, and this is a school year that largely has been without problems. Some of the other boys in the class have pushed kids off a slide, they've punched kids at a water fountain, they've bloodied noses, they've pushed them down, they've hit girls. But there's one boy who's very rich and is Russian, and his parents are racist as shit, who could donate a lot of money and get himself out of trouble. Every time that they have to go to the office for that, he hit a girl. They go to the office, they tell the girl's family, what did your daughter do to make him hit her? So automatically, you see like the beginnings of an abusive relationship. It's all about, what did you do to put him in that mindset of, daughter didn't share a juice box, so he decked from the nose. Perfectly normal behavior. Meanwhile, my son gets within 5 inches of a white girl and they fucking call us up there. They call a fire marshal. I'm surprised they didn't call the police when they finally did suspend him for something. You're seeing how the kids are treated differently. Around the middle of April, the principal says he has to be observed in a classroom or he can't come back for first grade. This is a problem because there's only 6 weeks left in the school year, and then they give us the names of the people they want us to use. They have to give us two names. Neither one of the names can do it. So the first name is not taking any new clients at all and says they can never do it. The second name says, sure, we can do it. We can do it next September when he's in first grade. Yet they've given us an ultimatum that we got to do it by the end of the year. We tell them this. They give us one extra name. The one extra name has a phone number that doesn't even work. We call 15 times. We can't get through. They never give us any additional names. Then we try to do it through our own health insurance and they stall the paperwork for several weeks. You're seeing where I'm going with this. I'm hoping, right? Like we're being gaslit on an epic scale. Then I say something to the principal in an email about, looks like you're just trying to kick our son out. You don't want him there and you just don't want to say that you're trying to kick him out, but you're setting all these impossible hurdles. Says, I'm not setting impossible hurdles. All I want him to do is keep going to occupational therapy, keep going to speech therapy, have an in-classroom assessment, have an in-clinic assessment, have a battery of other tests that I will determine at a later date to be completed throughout the summertime, be academically perfect, do tutoring as well, be behaviorally perfect, oh, and stop getting in so many incidents where white telling him for stuff and then their parents come up here and complain. As long as he can do all that stuff in the last month of a kindergarten school year, we're golden. Finally, they find a reason to suspend him. And this is just the most petty-ass bullshit. And the day after his birthday, he goes to the principal's office. He has a birthday party. Then right after that, they want to suspend him. My wife comes up there the day before he's suspended. And at this point, I'm noticing when I volunteer, the guidance counselor is following him around the school. Never seen this woman the first 6 months of the school year. Now, I go up there and volunteer at the science lab. There's three groups. The first two groups come in. I don't see her. Ford's group comes in. She's right behind him. Then he has to give a presentation for his birthday. She comes in the room. Never see this woman any other time. Then they have to do something at Art Easel. Don't see her with the first couple of groups that come outside. Then she comes outside when his group does art. They split the class into three or four different groups. I never see this woman unless it's his group. There's no way she's not been asked to follow him around. I say something about how this woman always seems to be the one catching him doing stuff and little things like that. And she reports to the principal and it seems like she's been asked to watch him. The next day, his mother comes up to the school to give a presentation. This is part of his week. It's his VIP week, which is when he gets to do whatever he wants in terms of presentations. His mother comes up there to give a presentation on Nigeria. Full dashiki. She's wearing full headdress. She comes up there with the book about his grandfather and all these different stuff, meeting the Queen of England. Traditional Nigerian. And also, I kind of want the kids to learn a little bit more about him and maybe be a bit more, stop telling on him all the time. Maybe be a bit more like, he's not different. He's not a weirdo. Let's be a little bit nicer to him. The teacher's an asshole. She makes her wait outside for 10 minutes. Now, you might think, well, if a parent comes there at 2 o'clock, we'll give the presentation at 2 o'clock. No, makes her wait outside for 10 minutes. Then when she finally comes in there, there's several boys that have been an asshole to my son all year long. They sit in the back of the classroom with their arms folded, and they don't even come up and engage with her at all. They shoot my wife dirty looks the whole time, like they just can't stand how jealous they are of this boy Ford. These kids are sports nuts, yet Ford stomps their ass at every sport that they play, and I think that's why they hate him so much, because he doesn't even care about it, and he beats them at all this stuff. The teacher doesn't say anything, doesn't make him come join the class, lets them sit at the back of the wall with their arms folded, scowling at her the whole time, doesn't let them engage. They finally get to the part where they get to ask a few questions. They ask a few questions. Oh, it's 2:30, we gotta go. And then she runs out of the classroom, doesn't say goodbye, thanks for your time, nothing like that. We gotta go. That day, we get another email from Principal Frank being like, you know, your son, he sneezed on a white girl at PE, and we had to send him to the office and talk about about feelings. I guess this is before my wife came up there to give the presentation. And I'm just like, you know, she gave a presentation. I think the kids are going to understand them better. Hopefully there'll be more cultural sensitivity. I think she doesn't respond to that. Then the very next day he gets suspended. Not 24 hours after my wife's gone up there to give a presentation on Nigeria and talk about things that are traditional African culture. And I'm talking about how the kid, how we're hoping for more sensitivity. We're hoping people will treat him a little bit nicer as we go forward. 24 hours later, he's being suspended for bullshit and put on social behavioral probation. Social behavioral probation is the next step to getting expelled. As I say, I'll be there in 45 minutes, and I go up there, and he's totally alone in her office. He's on the floor, passed out, asleep. That's how long he's been in there. He's probably been in there by himself. I said, son, how often are you in the room by yourself? Every day. How often does that happen? Hours at a time. So basically, you have a boy who's being kept in the equivalent of solitary confinement. The principal's trying to break him. And I saw this on a few days beforehand, where he supposedly said something to a white girl. She went and told him crying about it. Or so they said. I never saw her crying about it. But the guidance counselor, the vice principal, and the principal pulled Ford out of PE. And they asked her, they said, what's his favorite part of the day? I said, PE, science lab, and tech lab. They pull him out of that every fucking time. So that way, he's restless as hell. He didn't burn off his energy in PE. It guarantees he's going to get worse throughout the day. And they're doing it every day. I see them grilling him like they're members of the LAPD. What did you say to that girl? What did you say? I didn't say anything to her. That's what he's saying. They're grilling her. They said, you had to say something. What did you say to her? What did you say to her? Watching three adult grown women badger your son in front of you. You got to think, number one, what do they do when I'm not standing right here? Because this is hostile as hell. And number two, not a one of them witnessed this so-called incident with this girl. And by the way, the girl had a crush on my son. He didn't return it. I think this is like classic To Kill a Mockingbird thing where she wants to be with him. He's not really that interested. So she makes up a story that he did something to her or whatever like that. I mean, my son wants to play Legos. And this has been happening to black men for decades in this country. I'm just sitting here mystified as to what the hell their problem is. Why you've got the principal, the vice principal, and the guidance counselor taking an hour out of their day to grill a five-year-old. I'm baffled by this. A few days later, I come to go pick him up. I peel him up off the floor. Principal comes in and says, your son, he hit a girl at PE and we couldn't let him be in PE anymore and we're going to put him on a behavioral probation. And I said, okay, well, is the other boy who's had all the violent incidents this year, is he going to be on behavioral probation? That's none of your business. We can't talk about that. It's not appropriate to even talk about that. And I'm like, oh, okay. Not appropriate when a boy's hit 12 kids throughout the school year, literally 12 kids. You've had all these violent incidents. You say my son hit a girl at PE. It's the late April, only a month left of school. He's been put on behavioral probation while he's a black kid on a scholarship. And then the rich white kid, I've seen him carry scissors around, cutting shit off of bushes, and nobody gives a damn. Are you going to tell me that's not related to race? Give me a goddamn break. We get the behavioral probation a few days later. This behavioral probation contract, it says you must always do what you're told the first time you're told. You must always keep your hands to yourself. You must always be polite. What is you must always be polite? How vague is that? A teacher comes up and whispers under her breath, hey, good morning, Ford. How's it going? He don't even hear. And then he don't respond. And then they say, oh, he's violated the probation. He's out on his ass. The terms of the behavioral probation, there's 12 separate things that he must do. And when I get this probation, I'm thinking, well, he's a five-year-old in the last month of the kindergarten school year. It's May. Kids are wild as hell. So this probably is going to say like, hey, don't start fires, don't smoke crack, don't bring a lighter to school, don't bring any bottle rockets. No, it's just stuff that I don't think an adult could pass. It's so draconian. At this point, it's obvious like what they're trying to do. They say the headmaster of the school, a man named Headmaster Bull, he agrees with this course of action. So I send him a full report that says retaliation, harassment, and racial discrimination. He asks, like, he didn't know anything about this. Like, he doesn't know that the principal's been doing this the whole time. So he says, okay, a week from now, we can have a meeting about this because that's when his schedule was best. Well, that whole week, we don't get a single email. My son doesn't go to the principal's office one time. Nothing goes wrong that whole week, which makes me think, okay, he's going to the principal's office every single day before I complain. And then for a whole week, he doesn't have to go one time. Look like he never needed to be there in the first place. And by the way, if he's so dangerous, how come he's able to be in a principal's office with a room full of scissors and staplers and goddamn tape dispensers and everything else? How come he's able to be in a room full of sharp objects for hours at a time by himself, unattended, and they trust him to do that? He's such a menace to society, he can't go play basketball on the PE court. And by the way, him hitting the girl, I called the girl's own father to apologize. He says, Brody, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. He goes and asks his daughter. His daughter says, Ford didn't hit me. He tagged me at a game of recess. So him tagging her at a recess game is what they called hitting. And it's why they yanked him out of class. It's why they suspended him. And it's why they put him on a behavioral probation contract. So no, I don't think this is about his behavior. I'm pretty goddamn positive it's retaliation. tuition because I complained about a teacher, and also because he's on scholarship and they don't want to pay the scholarship, and also because of racism, because a lot of the parents don't necessarily want him there. And as they told me, both in person and later on, in one of the meetings with the principal, I guess referring to the fact my wife's a Muslim, she says, well, now you know that morning prayer, that's a part of the school, what they call chapel, which is just morning prayer. It's 15 minutes that they go to a chapel. He's bored during that time period. He finds it boring. They're 5 years old. They all fucking think it's boring. I think it's boring. All the adults are just sitting there being like, I got to pass the time while I try to make my business connections. I want to go over there and talk to Tim Allen, go over there and chat with Ellen Pompeo. They only want to go talk to the celebrities. That's the only reason that they're even going to chapel in the first place. Guys that sell real estate, they're just looking for a way to flip houses and shit. I mean, it's all about business connections. That's all anybody's there for in the first place. So of course all the kids think it's boring. So she's getting at that because she's basically saying my wife's Muslim and we can't fit in at the school. That's basically what she's driving at. This is California. This is Los Angeles. You don't expect to hear this kind of crap at a rarefied, celebrity-driven school with some of the richest, wealthiest people in Hollywood going there. This is not what you expect the principal of that school to allude to, especially since the interview process, they went out of their way to, oh, we're not that religious. We're so go with the flow. We're chill. We're easy. Bullshit. When I meet with the headmaster about my son possibly being the first kindergarten kid in history to be thrown out of a school, especially when he's not done anything wrong in the first place, and I tell him about what the principal's done, and he says, oh, well, behavioral probation, that's not realistic for a kindergarten kid. They don't know what it means. It's not effective. Basically confirming that he didn't know anything about it and what she was doing, and she lied saying he knew all about it. But I'm not encouraged because he spends the whole time trying to ask about the in-clinic assessment that they want to do and the in-classroom assessment that they want to do. And I'm asking him, if my son's such a behavioral menace, why does his preschool, his pre-K, and the first 6 months of Campbell Hall not picked that up? He's been at 3 schools in 3 years, and we've never heard shit about any of these problems until the last 3 months of the school year. What I don't know is the whole system is geared toward kids with special ed needs, and actually, if I could have got him diagnosed as special needs, which he does not really, and I don't think, and doesn't really need it, I could have probably kept him in that school that way. The principal of the school, Frank, is telling me, oh, my son is dyslexic, and the headmaster bulls, like, I have a son who's special needs, and the woman who does the special ed, like one of my boys is special needs. And at that point you might be thinking, how many white kids are labeled as special needs? Is this just something that they all go do? Just go get your driver's license and then you go to a clinic and be like, oh, it turns out that I see objects farther away than they really are. I'm special needs. I need to get a license for this so that way I can coast through school, you know, and never get kicked out.
It's a little bit like the college admissions scandal where every celebrity's kid is like, oh, I'm special needs, and that way I don't have to pass the ACT test.
It seems to be the only protection that people are being offered, because what I don't know at the time is that private schools are not under the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But he tells me, don't worry about the behavioral probation. You don't have to sign it. Just go about your business and I'll talk to you later. 2 weeks later, we're getting kicked out of the damn school. In between those 2 weeks, we get a letter from the financial aid office saying the $35,000 for his tuition has been granted for the first grade. Here's how the scholarship works. They raise it from other people. It's not like they just waive tuition. It's not like they just say, oh, we're just not going to charge you tuition. No, they raise $35,000 outside of the school. Celebrities like Ellen Pompeo, Tim Allen, Matt Boomer, Ariel Winter, all these celebrities that either went to Campbell Hall or have kids that go to Campbell Hall, they donate to the Diversity and Inclusion Scholarship Fund. They think that money's actually going to go to the kids to get them into the school. In our case, it didn't. They granted $35,000 for first grade. This is on May 6th. Then 2 weeks later, they're saying, oh, he can't come back for first grade. Sorry, suckers. So then you might wonder, well, what happens with the $35,000 that they raised? Does it go to another kid? Do they pocket it? Does the headmaster, does he give his wife a cushy job up there? Oh, he's already done that. She's already hired for a job up there. Oh, and by the way, the principal who's giving you all these problems, her husband is the head of the science department for the high school. And if that doesn't sound like a bullshit job, I don't know what does. And it's just one of the many, many $100,000 administration jobs they've got up there where parents and kids never actually meet them. But if you ever need something like special needs, like occupational therapy or speech therapy, they'll be happy to send you outside school where you pay even more money than the $35,000 you've already sunk into the place. So at this point, you might be thinking, hey, private schools are a pretty fucking good racket. A school like Campbell Hall, their elementary school, is dreadful. It's not any better than a typical public school, but they're charging charging $35,000 to $45,000. That's base tuition. Then you pay extra if you want aftercare for your kids to be watched. You pay extra for tutoring, which that's how a lot of the teachers supplement their income. What my son has, she makes several thousand more a week by tutoring a few kids. So all the teachers recommend, oh, this kid needs to be tutored. Then it goes to the other teacher's classroom and they get tutored after school. This supplements their income. So tutoring's not covered. Aftercare is not covered. Special classes are not covered. And what are the special classes? Well, there was one called Renaissance Fair, which is bullshit. They don't actually do anything, but the school pockets more money that way. One called dance, same thing. One was called storytelling. And while the principal is laying the foundation for us to get kicked out, she has the storytelling teacher email us about a week before our son's put on probation saying, your son talks too much in class. He tells too many stories in a class called storytelling. They don't want him to tell fucking stories. And when I go sit in the public thing, all the other kids are running at the mouth. Every time a white boy opens his mouth, it's like, oh my God, Chasten, you are so hilarious. Ford opens his mouth. Shut up. Sit still. Be quiet. Don't open your mouth. You're seeing this huge goddamn money pit, uniforms and school lunch and all these things that add up. Then there's the endless fundraising, the Bagpiper's Ball, the other fundraisers throughout the year, the Drive for the Diversity and Inclusion Scholarship, supposed to go to us but didn't, which you wonder where it does actually go. All told, the parents are probably paying several thousand dollars more a year, and that's if they pay in a lump sum. The $35,000 is a lump sum payment. If you make payments throughout the year, there's an 8% interest fee, meaning the parents who can least afford the interest fee are going to be the ones who have to pay it. So 8% interest over 10 months, you're talking about 80% interest. You've almost doubled the tuition cost for the year you couldn't afford in the first place because you couldn't pay it in one lump sum. This is bullshit, not to mention late fees and penalty fees and fees out the ass for this and that and the other thing. You're talking about a money printing machine. And meanwhile, the elementary school, which is K through 6, only about 20% of the entire student body, 80% of the kids never go to the elementary school. So the high school graduates, 12th grade graduates, 80% of them never spend one day in the elementary school. The school doubles when it gets to the secondary school. So they take in all these kids who went from K through 6 and K through 8 at these other schools. They take them in at the high school level or the 7th grade level, and by that time you can already tell who's an A student. You already know if a kid's got learning problems, or if they're a straight A student, or exactly what they can contribute to your school. If they're a student athlete, if they can win championships, if they can get you prestige in the acting department. So they're taking all these other kids that have aged out of the private schools that go K through 6 and K through 8, and they get credit when those kids get into UCLA. Even though they didn't learn their study habits at Campbell Hall, they didn't learn shit at Campbell Hall, and then they take a basic 12th grade class, and they're able to charge $45,000 for it. By the time they get to 12th grade, the tuition's $45,000, and by the time that my son would get to 12th grade, it'll probably be closer to $50,000, if not more, because you just got to keep up with the rate of inflation to see it would be $50,000. We've seen the money printing machine that is private schools. Now that we've been kicked out, what do we do about it? This is what I mean by civil rights case. You go to every educational attorney in Los Angeles, and I've called all of them. I've called everyone in Los Angeles, and I've called most of them in Orange County, and probably most of them south of Los Angeles. I might have called some in Nevada, maybe some in Arizona. I definitely called some in San Francisco. And what they all tell you is 95% of educational lawyers only take special education cases against public schools. The reason for that is the low-hanging fruit of the legal world. You have to have an IEP, an individual education plan, which is very strict legally, and basically they're easy cases to win because public schools, they don't have the legal power to fight it. A lot of times it's not worth it to fight it, so they fold really easily. They settle quick, and you can win those cases easily with an IEP. So all these educational attorneys pat themselves on the back. Every single one of them I'm calling, oh, we just won a case against this public school and that public school. Okay, well, will you take my case against a private school? Hell no, I don't touch private schools. My kids go to a private school. All these lawyers that are patting themselves on the back, they sue public schools and get $50,000 from their quick settlement because they took it on a contingency because the people were too poor to pay them out of pocket, then they use that money to send their kids to a private school, which can get away with murder. And I mean literally, because part of our educational contract that we signed says that there's a clause in there that says even if your kid is injured due to the school's negligence or incompetence, they're not liable for that. So even when you say, okay, civil rights, we can't win on those grounds because private schools are not under the Civil Rights Act, then you say, okay, what about harassment? Oh, they're not under those statutes either. Then you go to, okay, well, what about the child endangerment when my son was left alone and unattended for hours at a time, weeks on end at the school? And the principal knew this, and she knew she was making him miserable because she sent us a drawing he made of a sad face. I mean, this sounds like I'm making this shit up. We got an email, a fish wrapped in newspaper. It almost felt like a threat, you know, being like, hey, here's a sad face drawing that your kid made in my office. Maybe you should think about going to a different school. nice kid you got here. Be ashamed if something happened to it. I mean, these are mafiistic tactics, trying to make him miserable enough that we'll drop out, and then when we don't, booting us out anyway. There's no legal options available for lawsuits. Then you think about, okay, government agencies. Federal Department of Education, they have a Civil Rights Office of Complaint. They don't cover private schools. Then you go to the California Department of Education. You say, okay, California's a strict state. It's got a lot of regulations. Things are tougher here than at the federal level. There's got to be something here. California Department of Education, they say, oh, you got to try the Office of Civil Rights Complaint inside there. Oh, you want to go to the private school office. Oh, you want to go here. You spend 2 weeks ping-ponging around the different offices within the Department of Education before you get to somebody who says, oh, you know what? We don't cover private schools at all. All we do is to send us an affidavit every year just telling us how many kids they've got and how much money they raise. And I'll be like, okay, well, did Campbell Hall submit that for this year? No, they didn't. They're not in compliance with our laws. And I said, okay, well, what are you going to do about it if they didn't submit their affidavit? We send them an email. Okay, what are you going to do if they don't respond to that email? And I guess they'll get around to it when they get around to it. The end. Then you go to the State Board of Education and they say, oh, we don't regulate private schools. Then you go to the California State Superintendent. We don't regulate private schools.
If it were a public school, you could at least send a letter to the California Commission for Teacher Credentialing about the horrible teacher that you had. Oh, but guess what? Private schools don't require their teachers to be accredited. So this horrible teacher that we had, she wasn't even accredited to teach in the state of California. So you can't even do that for a private school.
On and on and on it goes. So then you think, okay, think about this more like a private business. There's got to be an agency that regulates private businesses. Sure enough, the California Consumer Affairs Bureau. Oh, you know what? If it was a college, we could do something. But private K-12, we don't cover that. Okay, California Office of Business Oversight. If it was a college, we'd cover that. Federal Trade Commission, who usually looks into bogus scholarships. Hey, if it was a college, we'd be all over them. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, who also looks into bogus scholarships. Hey, if it was a college, we'd be all over them. Same fucking thing. So private K-12 schools exist in a weird no man's land. People that regulate public schools don't look at them. And the people that do for-profit things, shady colleges and for-profit this and that, all the colleges that you see on TV, like, hey, I went to Arizona Western Online Tech, and in only 6 weeks, I became a doctor. I'll get a job one day in the Bahamas with my degree. Those are the kind of schools that they look at. Then you start talking about, okay, this is charities fraud. I don't give a shit what anybody says. Raising money that they're going to pay to us, agreeing to pay it on paper, and then kicking us out of the school anyway. This is the California Attorney General. He's going to look at this. This is charities fraud. Send a letter to him. You got everything with fucking letters with these government people. So you send a letter to him. 3 weeks later, letter comes back. Have you tried the Department of Education? California Department of Education. Ha! You just want to fucking scream at this point, right? Like you're about to pull your goddamn hair out. And somebody says, oh, you know what? There's an actual group that looks into private schools. It's called CAS, California Association of Independent Schools. So you call up CAS to report Campbell Hall. So send us all of your evidence and make your argument, and we'll decide if we want to even look into this or not. Send it all to him. And then you say, well, President of CAS, has he looked into this? He's actually going to be gone for 2 weeks and we're transitioning to a new president. So there's going to be an interim in July. But his secretary is who you might want to talk to. So you try to get in touch with the secretary. She says, I'm on bereavement leave for about a month. So then it gets kicked down to somebody else who clearly does not want to investigate it. And then you got to call him 3 or 4 times and email him several times. And they'll go, well, I guess I could contact Headmaster Bull. And I'm like, yeah, I guess you'll have to, because I'm not going to drop it. Finally contact him, spend 10 minutes on the phone talking to him. He says, well, we didn't do anything wrong. And they say, hey, sounds good to me. CAS, meanwhile, you find out, is an organization that is voluntary and that Campbell Hall pays to become a member of, and a member of good standing. So obviously it's private schools regulating themselves. Gee, I wonder what the results could be. Then you go to WASC, which is the Western Association of Schools and Colleges. They don't even want to deal with this because it's not a college or a for-profit school. Again, private K-12 schools are only interesting if they're for-profit, and almost none of them are. In Campbell Hall's case, they have a $50 million a year budget. They make it sound like a mom and pop, oh, Episcopalian values, all that bullshit. They make it sound that way. They're $50 million a year, and Denzel Washington's kids went there. They are not a mom and pop anything. They are a behemoth beast pit bull that will rip your face off if you let them. And meanwhile, they're being governed like a goddamn homeschool. All the stuff that's been set in place and the loopholes and the anti-regulation for homeschools is what they're using to avoid any government oversight whatsoever. Not only charities fraud because of the scholarship money granted to you that they didn't, but because they routinely raise more money than they need. For several years in a row, they posted that they raised over $1 million. They were only paying out $35,000, $70,000, $140,000, and yet every single year they were talking about, oh, we raised over $1 million to pay out $140,000. You talk to people about that at places like CAS. Well, schools might need to raise more money because donations fluctuate. 3 years in a row, they raised 10 times more money than they needed. Does that sound normal? Well, you know, it's up to them. And then you'd say, well, you know, surely schools sometimes raise money for scholarships that they don't actually pay out. Oh, absolutely they do. Did you ask him to see the books, or did you ask him why he was raising so much money? Oh no, that's their business. And I'm like, okay, so how could you determine if they're raising money for scholarships that they don't pay out if you never actually ask those kind of questions? Well, you know, I have to go. It really was stacked in the sense of the school is too big, it's been around too long, it's too prestigious for us to really ask questions about. Maybe if I'd called for like an Armenian school with 6 students that had just opened or whatever, they might have actually taken this shit serious. But for a school like Campbell Hall, which has 1,100 students and a $50 million a year budget and all kind of celebrity people that go there, are not going to lift a finger to really investigate it. I thought it was quite a scandal that you would be raising a lot more money than you had any intention whatsoever paying out. Not to mention the fact that the year my son went there and got the scholarship, he was only the third year that they'd ever done that. I had one lawyer tell me, how can you say the school's racist if they're given a diversity and inclusion scholarship? Which is hilarious that people would think that there would be given a scholarship. It's supposed to last from K through 12 and then they boot you in kindergarten and don't pay it for first grade and you're actually worse off than if you never went there in the first place. They think somehow just offering a scholarship that you have no intention of paying out, that would make you non-racist. But I think the reason is because the only civil rights argument you could make is the IRS passed the code called IRC 501c3 that says that schools have to at least attempt to reflect the diversity of their area, a demographic mix similar to their area. Now, the area Campbell Hall's in is not 80% blind, so the kindergarten class didn't really fit that. And I think it had been that way for many, many years. Racism is talked about a lot. Lack of diversity is talked about a lot when you look at different message boards and things like that. People talk about the school. So I think that's why they started it in the first place. He going there was only the third year they had ever done it. Most schools have been doing similar things like this for over a decade. And this is supposed to be an Episcopalian school. So there was quite a disconnect between seeing 75 years of good, we're good, we believe in raising good stewards, and then, get the fuck out of here, you poor black kid, broke-ass bum. I mean, the way they were actually treating us, and then the way that they were advertising all over the campus of how good they are, and how pure, and how everything that they do is good, and that's very typical of that headmaster. He would write a blog post on Easter weekend called Helping the Homeless, and it would be up about helping the homeless, and then you read the content, and it's about how you shouldn't actually give homeless people around the school money, because that would just encourage them to come closer to the school. So this is a school, 10 security guards. They got like ex-Israeli fucking special force commando G.I. Joe types walking around with guns on their hip. I mean, this is how paranoid these people are about security. Gates everywhere. There's a gate everywhere. You got to have a sticker to get in. When you come in the school, they want to take your driver's license. They want to scan it, make a copy of it. You got to be on the list. But just having homeless people within a block of the school is somehow threatening to the kids, because the kids go from a mansion to an SUV, to a gated school, to an SUV, to a mansion. They don't really spend time in the world that much. I mean, some of them do, but not most of them. They don't want homeless people around that badly that he's writing a blog post on Easter weekend called Helping the Homeless that's really about how you shouldn't help them because it would draw more of them to the school. That's the kind of sense that you're getting about this man. He is so full of his own shit. He believes his own hype. Basically thinks he's a good person, even though there's no real, like, you're raising money hand over fist so you can make $500,000 a year and give your wife a paid position at the school and doing all these fundraisers and driving a nice car and living in a nice house while you railroad black kids out of scholarships at the school, because the only reason that you're probably even given the scholarship other than charities fraud is because the IRS they put laws to stop Jim Crow. Those laws are for Jim Crow schools. In the Southeast, they didn't want it to be like private schools could get away with being 100% white. So they actually put those kind of laws in about you must attempt to reflect the demographics of your area for the Southeast. But it applies to California just as easily, and it should if you knew how segregated LA is. So finally, you get down to it and say, well, you know what? The water there smelled funny as hell. The water fountain smelled weird, and I put water in my kid's water bottle, and he didn't like the taste of it, and he said that it smelled weird several times, and I did a little home testing kit myself and found that it was dangerously close to lead and chlorine levels that are not supposed to be there. And I remember one day in the bathroom, a goddamn pipe burst in the bathroom. So surely to God, somebody can at least look at their water quality and tell me that, oh, something's going on with that. Let's just see if they're under any regulation whatsoever. Send out several different complaints to the California EPA and the water department and this and that. Somebody finally gets back to me and says, well, for public schools, this would be a scandal. And we could come up there and we could check the water and we can make sure the water's okay. With private schools, we have to be invited onto campus to look at the water. So I say they have to admit that there's something wrong with the water and invite you to come up and check it out for them. He goes, oh yeah, but now it's in their best interest to do that. They're going to want to do the right thing. I mean, if they're paying $40,000 a year and the parents find out about this, how are they going to find out about it if you never go up there and check the water? Well, it turns out that they've never done a water test, and that even though it is voluntary, almost every private school in LA would have done a water test by now, so probably it's just a brand new school. Nope, been in business for 75 years. Oh, well, you know, probably it's a new headmaster and he just didn't know the laws and regulations. He didn't understand it very well. Nope, he's had that same job for 16 years. So he's definitely knows what he's doing. He knows exactly what's supposed to be done and he's just not doing it. Well, we're going to send him an email and I bet he'll get back to it. Nope, they sent him an email. He fucking ignored it. And at that point, I say, what can you do? You sent him an email. You asked if you could come check it. You said it's never been checked. You said the lead levels are too high in the water. The chlorine's too high in the water. And by the way, a lot of Kimball Hall teachers get sick. Health problems. I think it's because they're teaching in a school for years on end that is under no regulations whatsoever to provide them a clean drinking water. He comes back and says, well, there's really nothing we can do, but if he ever gets back to us on that voluntary email so that we can come inspect it, I said, so he has to agree to it and then let you come up there. So basically, there is no problem as long as he doesn't agree to it. As long as he doesn't agree to a water test, he can't say there's something wrong with the water. But if you ever come up there and test it and there's something wrong with the water, then he's got to rip out all the filtration systems, all the pipes, and by the way, all the parents are going to know what's going on and they're going to say, hey, this school's not had clean drinking water for years. So it's almost in his benefit to fucking bury it. Then there's no scandal. All these teachers that have had cancer and all these health problems, hey, we don't know where it happened. Maybe they live in apartments that have got asbestos. We don't know. We don't care. Who gives a shit? Meanwhile, he drinks bottled water every day. Never mind what he's exposing the kids to. It's in his interest to ignore it. Just like with our racism claim at the school, if he comes out and says, you know what, this teacher acted inappropriately and this principal was way out of line, we're going to do something about this, then he said that the school acted inappropriately, that opens him up to a greater lawsuit than what he sent me, which was an email being like, several of the parents at the school, they don't want you to come back for first grade, and the teacher doesn't want you to come back, and the principal doesn't want you to come back, but there's no conspiracy to keep him out. So in one breath, he says, there's no conspiracy to keep your son out of first grade. Then in the next paragraph, he says, teacher, parents and administrators don't want him to come back for first grade. Sounds like a conspiracy to me. So then I want to go to various civil rights groups and I want to go and I want to tell them what happened. And so you type in civil rights groups Los Angeles. First thing that pops up is something called UCLA Civil Rights Project. And you contact them and think, this is perfect. UCLA, a lot of Kimball Hall students go to that school. That's like one of their bread and butter Ivy League show ponies. Like, hey, it's worth it paying us $600,000 for K-12 plus probably more like $700,000 because you'll get into UCLA one day. So I go to UCLA Civil Rights Project, and first of all, everybody that works there just about is white. So there's a bunch of white women and a few white men, and that's where a lot of this money goes. There's about 12 people that work there. And they say, well, we don't really deal with private schools. And I'm like, yeah, but private schools are filter schools for UCLA, so it seems like you might be particularly interested. And they'd be like, well, all we do is collect data. And I'm like, okay, well, can you give me the data on how many Black and Latino students are admitted to these upper-tier private schools versus how many actually graduate or how many get booted? How many get expelled for discipline? Because some estimates say that even though white students are four times more likely to get in than Black and Latino kids, the expulsion numbers are flopped. So you might have like four times the expulsion for Black and Latino kids. We don't collect that data. What do you collect? We collect data on public schools and their demographic research. I'm like, so basically census data that anybody could look up, because public school data is public. We take that data and we compile it, and when people ask for it, we give it to them in case they're doing research into something. And I'm like, so basically 12 people and an endowment of millions of dollars, you're like a redundant library, but you take all the grants and the research money. This is another huge problem with civil rights activism. I mean, I was Googling groups that would be like, and this is just some names I'm going to throw out there, but there were literally dozens of groups, Diverse Society for School Integration. Go and look. Two white women started a group in Brooklyn and they don't even respond to your emails. They collect money. And there were just dozens of groups like that. Like, no matter who I was talking to, they'd be like, we don't deal with private schools. Would be called something literally like Council for Racism in Schools. And you say, okay, this is about racism in schools. Oh, we don't deal with that. No, Like, we just raise money about it. But somebody would be like, hey, we don't deal with the legal aspect. We don't deal with the media aspect. We don't deal with trying to change the law. We don't deal with awareness. We don't deal with politics. What the fuck do you deal with? This shit is ridiculous. This is how Black Lives Matter and groups like that, this is how they got started and had to get started, because so many of the entrenched groups didn't want to do anything. People say, what about the ACLU? I contacted the ACLU. First of all, it took a while to even get in touch with somebody that worked there. And I only got in touch with somebody that worked there due to a referral. Somebody who worked at a private law firm referred me to somebody to talk to. They were the Los Angeles education attorney. And then they started talking about kids in cages and border rights and stuff like that. But I guess I'm confused as to why an immigration attorney wouldn't be dealing with that versus the education attorney for Los Angeles. Like, more than one bad thing can't be happening in America at any one time. Like, it all has to be devoted to this one hot button issue. The NAACP, which has got multiple branches all around Los Angeles. And I contacted all of them, and none of them got back to me. And then eventually got in touch with the NAACP, the Legal Defense Fund, and they didn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Then you go through all the other various groups. Maybe can take it on a pro bono basis. They're not going to do it because it's too difficult a case and we might lose. We only want to take cases we can win if it's pro bono. You run through all these different options and you start to see that a lot of the civil rights organizations and groups that are available, they're not really available. You're going around and you're looking at all this shit and you're thinking, okay, there's no other outlet. I got to do the Better Business Bureau, which has no legal authority to do anything. Send them a Better Business Bureau complaint, ask him all kind of questions. What about the scholarship? Where does the money go? What are you going to do about it? Nothing. I mean, doesn't respond to any of my questions. Just says, we didn't do anything wrong and we wish him the best. That's it. And a long ass complaint that I've sent. But just that two sentences, out of calling every government agency you can think of in California, the most regulated state in America, that is the only response that I've gotten from them at all. When I went to Yelp and tried to post about what we went through and how you can't trust a school like that because they don't honor their scholarships, and we chose that school for K-12 because we thought it would be 13 years and the scholarship, then we get kicked out, and in first grade we're scrambling, $1,000 applying to all these schools and 6 months of work and aggravation and a whole year where we're spending money and stressed out because we're doing all this shit out of pocket, the OT, the speech therapy, the trying to find the in-clinic assessment, trying to find the in-classroom assessment, and they've made it impossible for him to ever get in a private school again because he's the kid that gets kicked out of kindergarten. A school like Campbell Hall, it costs $100 just to apply to it at all. There's an application fee. So they're making thousands of dollars just off the application fees. If you have over 500 kids that apply and only 44 that get in, you're talking about several thousand dollars just to even look at their applications and reject them. And if you got less than 5% chance of getting in, your gambling odds are going to be better at anything but slots, you know, burning $100. So that keeps people out. I just try to post something like that to Yelp to let people know. And because they pay to get negative reviews taken off of Yelp, which you can do if you become an elite business member or whatever they call it, Blue Circle, Blowjob Club, whatever it is, you can get negative reviews yanked. My negative reviews on Yelp don't even show up. People can't even find out what they did to us. And then that's all the incentive in the world to treat us like garbage and treat us like shit. It's almost incentivized to treat us poorly because they're not under civil rights laws that would have protected us. That is what you're dealing with. You're dealing with a climate where the parents of the Russian boy openly brag that they're not inviting us to the birthday party. They invite all the white kids. They don't invite my son. At first, it's going to be at their house. They say, we don't want him at our house. You got the kids throwing rocks and twigs in his hair, being like, oh, his curly hair, it's a bird's nest. They're teasing him about his skin, talking about it's dirty, and make fun of how dark his mom is. They just go on and on with this racist bullshit. And we know that's part of being in a private school. We don't even complain about it. But from the administration, we're getting, you got to jump through 18 hoops that are set on fire, and don't you goddamn dare say a word or we're going to boot you out of here. And the teacher's asking for the same thing. While my wife's on maternity leave with a brand new baby, all for behavior that is normal and actually less severe than what's going through. And by the way, the concept of the looking glass self, the worse you treat somebody, the worse they believe they are, so they will get worse. So of course, the worse they're telling my son that he is, the worse he becomes. You can begin to see what people who have to make civil rights cases for a living are up against. And people said, well, you call the education attorneys. What about the civil rights lawyers? They almost exclusively cover matters dealing with the government. I had 15 lawyers say, if this was a public school, this would be the easiest case I ever won. But because it's a private school, they can do whatever the fuck they want. Civil rights lawyers mostly sue the police. So if you'd have a bad encounter with the police, they will take your case. I called Johnny Cochran's old law firm and they said that. Gloria Steinem's law firm said, yeah, if it was the government, same thing. And it's so dispiriting that when you have a kindergarten kid, you send them to a school, you're paying $35,000 for them to be at a place where they have less rights than Guantanamo Bay. Guantanamo Bay has more laws than this place does. And I just wanted to share that story with you on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I know this is not like a typical podcast. It's probably not what you thought you were going to be listening to when you clicked on this. In our culture, we talk about political correctness and Twitter, right? So Twitter applies mostly to celebrities. If Charlie Sheen says something stupid, Twitter can bust him, I guess, theoretically. Boo-hoo him, $100 million white guy who's already set for life and will never go broke. He doesn't get to be in a Doritos commercial because he said something not PC and Twitter didn't like it. But when it's actual people, when it's a kindergarten kid whose family needs a scholarship, we have a reliance on the school. We just had a baby. We need that scholarship more than ever for first grade. When we have a reliance on a place and we need that money and it matters and we get booted, there is fucking nothing that you can do. There is no oversight. There are no government agencies. I sent a letter to Elizabeth Warren's office. They said, we're not your senator. You have to send it to a California one. They forwarded it to Dianne Feinstein. I never even wasted my time mailing Dianne Feinstein. And she still sent me a rejection being like, hey, we can't do anything about it. You should contact a lawyer. Ted Lau's my congressman. Send him the same thing. Hey, you should contact an attorney. Even when you contact the IRS for possible charities fraud, private religious schools are under special exemptions where we almost have to get approval from higher ups just to look into their books to audit them. Basically, if Headmaster Bull walks in and says, hey, I use that money to give my wife a job and to give myself a brand new car, and by the way, I'm committing charities fraud, I'm at the mercy of the courts, so best case scenario, never gonna happen. They might do something about it, and then the media swarms in and covers it. Till that happens, nobody gives a shit. I even called reporters like the LA Times, and the LA Times says, we don't really break stories. Educational reporter for the LA Times, Howard Bloom. I don't really break stories. The only reason that we found out about the college admissions scandal, the FBI was on it, and then somebody went to the courthouse and they pulled the documents that had already been filed, the affidavits. Literally what he said, if it was up to the LA Times to break that story, it would have never been broken. That's an investigative journalist for one of the biggest newspapers in the country telling you that. It doesn't get much more dispiriting than that. Then you call the local TV affiliates for PBS SoCal, a blonde woman, does their producing segments. Well, my kids go to a private school, and yeah, it's majority blonde, and 2/3 of the kids there are blonde, but I don't really see that as a race thing. I think it's more about class. A school like Kimball Hall gives 5 times as much financial aid, 5 times as much out of my son's kindergarten class, white kids getting financial aid over black kids and Hispanic kids. So no, I don't fucking think it's about class. But because her kids are blonde, and they go to a school that's majority blonde, I don't want to talk about this. People that are reporting in the media, if it was like the Southeast, but when it comes to their neighborhood, that's why people like to talk about racist cops. Majority of white liberals love talking about racist cops because they're not in law enforcement. They never will be. They'll never have to make those decisions. And so if you can talk about a racist border patrol guard or a cop that pulls people over, that's the 1%. It's a group that they don't belong to. Well, yeah, but that private school where your kids go to, they're fucking racist as hell. Condo board where you're a member of, and also the real estate organization in your neighborhood where you've turned every black and Latino family that comes in for housing payments, shut up. We don't want to talk about that. Even when somebody's black, it's not a guarantee that they'll do anything. On Campbell Hall's board, there's one black guy. One. I mean, I hate to say it, but it does feel a little bit like a token ship because there was one black member that retired, and then he got to be on the board to replace the woman that retired or got kicked off. Maybe Headmaster Bull didn't want her there anymore. I email about half the board. So somebody like John Ridley, the screenwriter who wrote 12 Years a Slave and American Crime, Season 2 of American Crime is set in a private school, so you'd think like, okay, his wife, she's on the board at Campbell Hall, she'll care about this. Gail Ridley will care about this. No, she sure doesn't. Never even responds. Send her 3 or 4 emails, never even bothers to respond. But at least the black board member, he does respond. And he responds to tell me, oh, I'm going to go talk to Headmaster Bullen. By the way, he's the head of the Heritage Group. So there's a black group at the school called the Heritage Group. He also sits on the board. He's also good friends with Headmaster Bull. So what could be a conflict of interest there? The one organization that's supposed to be there standing up for black rights is controlled by a guy who sits on the board and makes money off the school, and therefore in his interest to never have a scandal and never have a pushback and never talk too negatively about the school. So he says he's going to go talk to Headmaster Bull about it. Give him a week. I give him a week. I call him, he don't call me back. He pretty much fucking ghosts me for about a month. Finally, I call him after we've already been kicked out. His daughter answers the phone and then hands it to him. Otherwise, I probably never would have talked to the guy because at this point, he's ghosted me. And he's like, oh, hey, how's it going? I've clearly called him. He didn't actually want to talk to me. He says, oh, well, you know, I never actually talked to him about it. There wasn't nothing I could do. And you should let it go. And, you know, you should be thinking about where he's going to go to school next year. Yeah, that scholarship, if you add up all 13 years, that scholarship's worth $600,000. Hey, don't think about that $600,000 and how we fucked him over and committed all these crimes. Don't think about that. Think about where you're going to go for first grade, dummy. Never even talked to him about it. Was going to straighten it out, then ghost me, then never even talked to him about it, according to him. Probably did talk to him about it and just didn't want me to know what he talked about. It was clear that this was not his problem. He didn't care less. He doesn't give a shit. The school for the board is a money printing machine, and the headmaster who sits at the school, he controls the board. But when we're getting into the school and we met that guy, it's a good school. They care about minority issue. His daughter had never spent one day at that school. She was enrolled at a different private school. The same day that my son started kindergarten was the same day his daughter started the 10th grade at that school. He had no idea how they treated black students. His daughter never went to the elementary school. She never spent one day at the high school. I think I'm done talking about this. I know you guys are done listening to it. And I think when people are talking about performative wokeness and PC this and you can't say anything anymore and everybody's oversensitive and overreacting, this case proves that's not true. This is in Los Angeles. This is the epicenter of PC-ness and the media. Multiple celebrities contributed to that fund and got ripped off. Multiple people in Hollywood are at that school. Board members are Hollywood people, and it still didn't make a damn bit of difference. Nobody gave a shit. I think if you can look at this case, you can begin to see how hard it is to make a civil rights case stick, no matter who you are or what the circumstances are. And I appreciate you listening, and I had to get it off my chest, and I really want to do it on MLK Day so that way the next time you think, I went the cashier, I couldn't even sneeze the right way without her calling racism and I'm going to lose my job. Now, just shut up, because it's not really true. A lot of this stuff people talk about being overly PC, it only matters if Twitter decides to give a shit that day. But for the 99.99999% of Americans who are not that, they don't give a shit about you. And I've heard that story about the woman who tweeted a joke about AIDS. She was going to South Africa and says, I hope I don't get AIDS. And on the plane ride, she lost her job and she lost her friends. I've heard it multiple times from multiple sources. It is an outlier because it's rare. Shit like that does not happen every day, despite what you may think. And people tweet stuff, and if Twitter decides to give a shit, you may lose a job. You may have a temporary setback. It's not the case that that makes civil rights cases any easier to win. All right, folks, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll be back with episode 54. Which will be a return to normal, I hope. Thanks for listening, everybody.